following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Take a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action, a lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
After a long weekend between West Point, Newark, and anywhere in between, it's good to be back on Inside Eagle Nation for another edition. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. It was not the shortest trip that we thought it was going to be. It was not the best trip we thought it was going to be. But got to experience Mikey Stadium and Army. We'll get into that in a little bit. But it was a little bit of an adventurous trip home.
Great experience actually at West Point on post. And I'm sure that it was shared enough on social media the last few days about what the team had to go through trying to get from Newark back down to Georgia and having to wait an extra day and somehow keeping themselves engaged, keeping themselves focused. I mean, they knew that they weren't going to have class this week because it's coming up on Thanksgiving. But to have to sit for really a full day and have your schedule turned upside down and have to make a new schedule, we saw this on social media as well, but a huge amount of credit goes to Jared Benko, Chris Davis, Sean Fitzgerald, Nikki Donoff over at Operations, and everybody that had to shift gears at a moment's notice when we found out that we were not going to be able to fly out after the game on Saturday. And to be able to make that as smooth as possible when everything else was not smooth, they deserve a lot of credit for what they were able to accomplish.
No doubt. Those three did a heck of a job. And a lot of people don't see the behind the scenes, and for a reason, nobody needs to see it because nobody really cares what goes on behind the scenes as long as on Saturday you put out a good product. But the job that they did, and it all comes down to this. It was about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was 150 pizzas that got delivered to a hotel when nobody thought that was going to happen 2 hours before.
Well, when Chris came over,
it was pretty good pizza too.
It was, and Chris came over and talked to us, the whole crew. We were sitting in the DoubleTree up near the Newark Airport, just trying to figure out if we were going to get rooms, where we were going to be, and whatnot. And having to have the conversation, okay, what pizza place in Newark is open this either early or late that can do all of this and actually get it here before we may get a flight out of here to get back to where we are supposed to go. But the fact that I think that it could have been a very frustrating experience, which I'm sure for a lot of people it was. It could have been an emotionally draining experience, especially after losing a game by 1 point, a game that Georgia Southern probably should have won after leading by 14 points. They still, though, they have this ability to just move on. And this whole era that we're in is just teaching us you better be ready for everything. You're not expecting it to be something like this, even though 3 years ago when we were in Louisiana, right before Coach Lunsford got hired, we had to wait an extra day. But the thing about that, we knew right away we were going to be waiting. We got on the plane, found out there was a flat tire, had to get back off the plane. We knew that we were going to have that night down in Cajun country. This one, we waited for 8 hours only to be told that we could not fly out for a number of reasons, and there's no sense in calling out people. I think that's been done enough, and they know what they did, and hopefully they can be better in the future. I don't know if it's going to be with Georgia Southern, but hopefully they can be better in future endeavors. But the way that everybody handled it, it shows the kind of people that we do have here and the direction that we are going despite all the things that are going against us.
I think Frank at one point looked at Coach Lunsford and said, well, hey, at least you don't have to interview for a job tomorrow.
Yes.
As always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Couple of news notes to get to in other sports around Georgia Southern Athletics. Georgia Southern Rifle fell to number 5, Alaska Fairbanks in Oxford this past weekend. And that wraps up their fall portion of the schedule. They will get things back going once again in January. But a side note to that, Alaska Fairbanks drove 72 hours from Alaska down to Mississippi. I can't imagine a situation where that's any fun.
And what?
Exactly. We thought us driving to Arkansas State a couple of years ago was a long haul, but goodness gracious.
Well, at least we found a way to make that fun. I don't know any way that you make 72 hours driving fun.
No, I can't imagine it. And if you figured it out, let us know, because
we need to get Roger back on to talk about if a Santa Cruiser can go 72 hours.
Georgia Southern Swimming and Diving hosted their first conference match over the weekend at the Eagle Invitational. And a lot of records to get to, as Anna Maria Horniak broke the school record in the 400 individual medley with a time of 4 minutes 22.05, breaking the 10-year-old record by almost a full second. Would also go on to move into second all-time in the 100-meter breaststroke and set the school record in the 200-meter breaststroke. Katie Knight made the NCAA zone qualifier in the 1-meter dive with a score of 268.45 in the finals. And then Tori Rucker capped off the second day by moving into second all-time in the 100-meter butterfly with a time of 55.51. A pretty good weekend for swimming and diving.
Anytime you have to take out the red pen and make a lot of notations in the record book, that's how you know you had a good day.
Yeah, Aaron Soka's got his work cut out for him the next couple of days, getting all the records updated. And you know he's going to be the one that's going to be on it, double-checking about the 75th record or whatever it is. Georgia Southern Volleyball finished up their season in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. An impressive win on Wednesday against the number 2 team in the East, and the Troy Trojans got the victory 3-2. Lauren Hager set the school record with 19 blocks. The Eagles as a team set the school record for 27 blocks in a match. And that was one that you and I talked about it afterwards. It felt like that was one of those, and I don't like the word statement win, but it was a win that this team really needed to show how far it's come.
That's how you build a program.
Yeah.
When you're Chad Willis, when you're recruiting for the future of Georgia Southern volleyball, you needed something to be able to point to. And outside of a couple of other wins, you look at the win against Troy here last year when they came in 12-3, Baylor Bumford setting the school record for blocks in that game. But they needed to have a win that shows what they are capable of and where they have come from. And that's the first Sun Belt tournament win for Georgia Southern volleyball since making the move in 2014. So that is a big deal. Now, even though it ended one day later and because of tiebreakers, they were not able to get out of pool play, and that was unfortunate because they had defeated Troy 3 consecutive times. But that is a kind of win where when you're recruiting the next batch and the next batch and the next batch, look, my last class was part of this. What is your class going to do? What is your class going to do? Are you going to be the one to hoist up the trophy at the end of the tournament eventually? And then we're going to get to go back to the NCAAs. That's what they can be part of.
As Danny alluded to, volleyball would then fall to UT Arlington, who is number 3 on the western side of the bracket, 3-1 on Thursday. And again, a little bit of a different format for volleyball because you had only your division play throughout the year, so you only played Eastern teams for Georgia Southern. You didn't see anybody on the West. The only team you ended up playing on the season was UT Arlington in that pool play. They went pool play for 3 days, and then the winner of each of the 4 pools would go into a bracket. But because of tiebreakers, Troy would win the pool and move on to bracket play. But talking to Coach Willis, texted him for each one of the games, and I told him that after I texted him Wednesday and they won, I had to do it again on Thursday, and then they had to go and get some Lamberts. He said, we've got reservations for tomorrow night.
What if they play checkers?
Big checkers and caught a couple dinner rolls. Is throwing dinner rolls considered COVID-friendly?
If you remember, the people that are throwing the rolls do so with those large mitts because, number one, as we've said before, these are big dinner rolls, but two, They're also hot dinner rolls. These are coming right out of the oven.
That's true.
And I'm not exactly sure of their medical quality, these thick oven mitts. You know what I'm talking about. But, yeah, that I would think it's good enough to be able to sample them.
Yeah. You've got gloves on it. You're fine.
I think so.
Yeah, it'll be all right. But that's all the news and notes coming out of Georgia Southern Athletics. Did get one note coming out of football. The game against the FAU Owls inside Paulson Stadium, scheduled for the 5th of December, is going to be a 6 o'clock kick under the lights at Allen E.
That might just be a preview as well of the next week against Appalachian State if that game ends up getting played. In fact, if this game ends up getting played. But the suggestion, I know how it is down here, and it can be 85 degrees at a moment's notice, but I would strongly suggest wearing multiple layers for that contest.
Yeah, it's not going to be quite as cold as Appalachian State up there last year.
No, I'm okay with that.
Speaking of cold, we dive into this Georgia Southern Army game. We were expecting snow at one point looking ahead.
Yeah.
It turned out to be a beautiful day up at West Point.
It was really nice, and credit to you for your driving skills that early in the morning. We didn't get a chance to set up on Friday night after we landed. But once we got to post on Saturday morning, because we're going on the air at 10 a.m., so we had to get there a few hours early to make sure everything was okay, because they sanitized the entire press box that night, and that's why we couldn't get in when we usually would have. But getting a chance to see the sunrise at West Point, that gives you the that gives you the itchies. That was really cool.
That was one. As we were driving up, you started to see a couple of sun rays poking up. And we're like, no, wait a minute. Well, give me 10 minutes. Let us get in the stadium, and we'll be fine.
As we're taking those side roads in southeastern New York, we go through Tuxedo. And I never heard of Tuxedo, New York. Apparently, Walt Weiss, great baseball infielder and former manager, now the bench coach for the Braves.
Yeah.
He's from Tuxedo, New York. I felt underdressed when we were driving through there. It's a terrible joke, but I was going to tell it anyway.
Well, I think you can only feel underdressed. If you're from Tuxedo, do you ever feel overdressed?
See, I'm picturing Frank taking the Action News van through Tuxedo wearing a tuxedo.
No, he'd be in a Tuxedo t-shirt.
That whole car probably would have been.
No kidding. But it was a final score of Army 28, Georgia Southern 27. And if you're Georgia Southern, you felt good out of the gate, got the first score, and went up 7-0, and you're up 21-7 at half. And then it just kind of fell off the rails a little bit for Georgia Southern in the second half.
You created your opportunities. The fumble that Tyer Tyler had at the one-yard line, Raymond Johnson reached out and knocked it away. Rashad Bird recovered. Tyler, remember, was making his first career start, and you could tell he was a little bit nervous because he fumbled the next time he had the football. Derek Canteen runs that in from 22 yards and what turned out to be a really cool story. He flashes 22 after he scores, and come after the game, we find out he reveals on social media his father had served in the Army for 22 years.
That was really cool.
That's an awesome story, and I don't know how it worked out so perfectly. I guess it was supposed to happen that way. Army comes back on a long drive to cut it to 7 on a 4th-and-1 play. And then how about Cam Brown getting involved on a 24-yard touchdown pass, wide open, kept his feet in bounds inside the pylon. That turned out to be Georgia Southern's best drive of the day, got them back up 14. And even though they did retake the lead in the third quarter on another touchdown pass to Logan Wright, first receiving touchdown of his career, you could feel that really early in the third quarter, Army had grabbed momentum. They blocked a punt. They blocked an extra point. Georgia Southern missed a short field goal. And I think at that point, when the Eagles were up 21-7, they had a chance to really take hold in the second quarter. But the missed field goal, which could have made it a 3-score game, that left it open. And then even though it took Army a little bit, they were able to accomplish what they wanted to. And then, I mean, we all saw the end of the game and having to go to 3 different quarterbacks at one point because Shy was unavailable to go because of his shoulder. But Justin Tomlin coming in cold, literally and figuratively. He had a phenomenal throw to Malik Murray down the seam, and then the final play, we did find out that the call was to keep the ball in the center of the field. So the ball was going to be in Tomlin's hands. He was just going to try to get as much as he could, get back on the ball, spike it, and then let Alex Rayner or Dylan Lewis, whoever was going to be coming to try to win the game, and come to find out that the play took a little bit longer to finish than they would have wanted to. Army laid on the ball, and I'll defend this until we can't defend anymore. I could have sworn I heard a whistle with about 7 seconds left to stop the clock to get the bodies unpiled. And then what became a moot point was when they didn't reset it, when it got down to 1 second, you can't spike it inside a three. That's a rule that's been in place for a number of years. So the fact that the review took as long as it did, the only thing that could have happened for Georgia Southern was to say, okay, we need to have it in real time. So if there was a whistle, where could it have stopped? Where could the spike have happened, and how much time could have been on the clock? But once they determined that it was a normal rhythm of play, because there were also eagle bodies at the bottom of that pile, you couldn't put time back. You can't spike it inside of 3 seconds. And that's why ultimately Georgia Southern didn't get a chance to win the game.
And I know we talk all the time that hindsight's 20/20, but when you look at it, Georgia Southern with 22 seconds left on the clock, the average play runs about 4 to 6 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody would say that you have enough time to run a play and then spike it and then kick it. But again, because of whatever happened after the play, and you can defend that and argue that all you want to, but at the end of the day, that's what the hand you were dealt. And it was a tough pill to swallow for Georgia Southern, because Terry said it in the Ford locker room wrap-up that he felt that after Rainer had missed that field goal that would have made it a three-score game that we mentioned, he felt in the deepest parts of his innards, as Frank would say, that Rainer was going to come out and he was going to redeem himself with a game-winning kick.
It would have felt so much like Louisiana if that was the case, because Nate Snyder had missed earlier that game, and then he gets a shot from 53 and the Cajuns end up walking off. And Terry also mentioned this a couple of times during the game and during that drive, that the Eagles were going with the wind. They had the wind at their back. It would have been a 47-yard try with the wind. Certainly would have helped, but remember, the Eagles have not attempted a field goal longer than 41 all year. We know Rainer's coming off of ankle surgery. We know that Dylan Lewis has the supposed bigger leg, but he's more of a punter, kickoff guy. He doesn't necessarily have the experience of kicking field goals. And look, despite that, Rainer still had a fine year. He's made 12 field goals. He went 4-for-4 the week before against Texas State. He has the ability.
Yeah.
You could also have said, do you just go up there and spike the ball, but then you're not giving yourself a chance to move it closer. If you get sacked anyway, the clock's going to run out. There's a lot of different scenarios that are working through your mind. Ultimately, if the play would have happened faster, okay, but the Eagles put themselves in that situation with the miscues earlier on. We didn't see the offense be as consistent as I think that you would have liked. And granted, they didn't have the ball. They didn't have a chance to be consistent. 21-36 time of possession, that's the lowest that Georgia Southern's ever had in a road game. Army took what the Eagles did the previous 2 weeks against Troy and Texas State and did it right back to them.
Yeah.
They ran the ball 73 times. And for the Eagles to have only given up 243 on the ground, that's a damn win. I don't care who you're talking to. You give up 3.3 yards per carry to a flexbone team, you did something right.
Yeah.
Reynard Ellis, 18 tackles, and a great performance on social media after the game as well. C.J. Wright, 10 tackles. Anthony Wilson had 11 tackles. Rashad Byrd, 12 tackles. That defense played its guts out, because they're not used to being on that field that long. They're used to being on that field about 12 to 15 minutes less than that. But in the kind of game that it had to be, we knew that more defensive linemen were going to travel. There were a lot more substitutions, thankfully, because Army was doing the same. But I think that they played about as hard as they could have. You're going to remember the 10-minute, 50-second drive, but that's something that what Army does. That's not... They just converted. They got to third and short. They got to fourth and short. They were okay getting the 3 yards at a time, because guess what? They can do math.
Yeah, times four is 12.
Yeah, they kept doing that. Then, in theory, if you didn't get them for a loss like the Eagles were doing more in the first half, that's why they got them off schedule. If they just kept moving the ball, 3-4-5, 3-4-5, they were going to get first downs, chew clock, and ultimately get into the end zone. That's how McCoy scored his two. That's how Buchanan ended up scoring the eventual game winner. They were just able to execute while the Eagles struggled to do that consistently, despite Shy Wirtz having three more touchdowns. He threw for two. He's now only one shy of Tracy Ham for tying the school record in touchdown passes. It didn't hurt in terms of Sun Belt Conference. You would have loved to have gotten the win to be 7-2 heading to Turner Field. I know we're going to get to that in our final segment. And the travel issues definitely throw a wrinkle in, but it was going to be kind of a short week anyway with Thanksgiving tossed in. I know they're going to have to change things a little bit. There have been morning practices these last couple of days with no classes, fewer people on campus, get in, get out. the plan they're going to have is going to be good because the last 2 years it has been good. Dominated Georgia State the last 2 years. And you got to find a way to keep hold of what has become a rivalry and not let it go back to the Atlanta Panthers.
Before we move on from the Army game, there's a couple of things that we need to bring up. One, the pregame festivities, ceremonies, whatever you want to call them at Army, were absolutely incredible. You had a right around an 80-year-old-ish World War II veteran playing the harmonica in the national anthem.
That about made you well up.
Yep. And then you had the Apache flyover that was about eye level with us in the Mikey Stadium press box. That was pretty cool.
The helmet sticker for the 3rd Infantry Division. We know that that's from the Marne down in Fort Stewart, and that was their 103rd birthday on Saturday. They matched it up perfectly, and they did everything justice. It was awesome.
And then the other thing, we gave kudos earlier to Jared Banco, Chris Davis, about what happened after the game, but a lot of people don't realize how much went in to make this game possible. And I know that it's because Ole Miss fell off the schedule when everything started coming out as far as COVID concerns went. And so this game was put on the schedule back in August. But it's not necessarily getting it on the schedule, but actually making this game happen. When you get up to New York and New Jersey and realize that everything shuts down right around 10 o'clock because of COVID, and the fact that in order for Georgia Southern to be able to go up and play at West Point, had to get clearance from the Department of Public Health. So much went into actually getting Georgia Southern up there, making sure they complied with everything as far as the state of New York goes, getting them on post. There's a lot that went into it that a lot of people won't see. And again, it's one of those things like a baseball umpire. If you don't see it, that means it went right. And so there's a lot of credit that needs to go out to Jared Benko, Chris Davis, and everybody in the football operations side of it for making this game possible. And it may not be the outcome you wanted, but I guarantee you this is one of those experiences that these guys are going to remember.
Well, if you have followed anything COVID-wise these last 7 months, New York has not been one that has been a very safe spot. Even as safe as post would be, I mean, once you're inside Army West Point at the United States Military Academy, you're probably feeling safer than you ordinarily would. But just a few weeks before, they had a COVID outbreak. They had quarantined, I think it was over 100 cadets, and I think their football program had been dealing with it a little bit. But with the size of their roster, they're going to be able to overcome things that other schools necessarily wouldn't have. But yeah, the fact that that actually happened, the fact that it was game nine, but to know that maybe something has started between these schools and maybe eventually Army will get the chance to come to Statesboro for its first ever game in Paulson Stadium, the relationship is there now where it wasn't from 2014 through 2019. And it doesn't matter why it started, but it has started. We've mentioned before that Army has multiple home and homes with teams in this conference. So it would stand to reason that as an independent, they're always going to have spots to fill for any year, and maybe Georgia Southern can return the favor sometime within the next few seasons, and they can head down this way.
It's going to be one that lives on in a lot of stories for years to come, and somebody that has a lot of stories is Roger Inman, and we go for one of those in Eagle Tales.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, most of our talks are about football, but tomorrow college basketball season begins. You have any stories about J.B. Scarce?
Yeah, I was J.B.'s equipment manager. J.B. Scarce is probably, actually, Coach Chapman was why I was one of the biggest reasons I came to Georgia Southern. But when Coach Chapman went to Auburn Montgomery, I came on over and I was J.B. Scarce's equipment manager for 2 years till he finally retired. And then about the time J.B. was getting ready to retire, we started a sport called football. And thank goodness we did, because it gave me a chance to stick here for four decades, going on five. Long time to be in one place. But Coach Scarce and I, he was the basketball coach. I was taller than him, thank goodness. JB was an excellent person to be around, a good motivator for players. And we had some pretty dag-nab good players back in those days. One of the road trips we did in basketball is we actually flew basketball charter from Statesboro Regional Airport and Convention Center up to Raleigh and played North Carolina State. We flew, I can't even tell you, the air carrier was so bad. But the plane was made in Japan. It was a YC-37 passenger plane that we flew up there that day. Flew there and back. If I remember right, we flew up there and back same day. Money was tight, but we did it probably less expensive. We could do it on a two-day trip in a bus. Even though we did have my 1954 Scenic Cruiser back then, my training bus, we used it on quite a few trips. We should probably find it and put it in the Hall of Fame here at Georgia Southern, if we could find that old bus. It's somewhere out there in bus burial land, unless somebody took it and made it into a motorhome.
Roger never disappoints with a good story. You mentioned it earlier that we needed to get him to talk about the Scenic Cruiser, and lo and behold, there it is.
We think so much about him on the sidelines at Paulson being one of those few connections we still have with Irk Russell, but in the more than 40 years he's been here, he has dabbled in just about every sport, so we're going to get a chance to flush out some of those other sports and some of the Olympic sports and hear how he was involved with those as well. And to be J.B. Scarce's equipment manager for a couple of years, that takes you back into the history of Georgia Southern basketball for the guy that's the winningest coach to ever be here.
Yeah, if you look at the Hall of Fame for Georgia Southern, if we ever get one of those that people want us to connect with 6 degrees, Roger Inman's probably a good place to start.
Yeah.
But you mentioned it a minute ago, Georgia Southern.
Terry second.
Yeah, that too. Roger and Terry, and you got 4 degrees. Georgia Southern and all of college basketball will get things going, or I should say most of college basketball will get things going starting tomorrow, as women's basketball will be at Jacksonville State to take on the Gamecocks, a 3 p.m. tip-off, as Georgia Southern men's basketball will be at home to take on Florida National as the Conquistadors come into Hanner. That'll be a 1 o'clock tip-off. Looking at Georgia Southern women's basketball first, they'll take on the Gamecocks, who finished 14-16 a year ago, finished 5th in the Ohio Valley Conference. Do have one of their two top scorers returning in Taylor Hawks, averaging about 12 points a game and about 5 rebounds, and can really shoot it from behind the arc, about 35% from three-point land. So it's going to be a good test. It's always a fun trip over there to Jacksonville, Alabama, just about an hour away from downtown Atlanta, so maybe some of the Atlanta folks can swing over to Jacksonville, Alabama, and then make your way home back to Atlanta for some Thanksgiving turkey. But Georgia Southern men's basketball will get things going inside Hanner Fieldhouse against Florida National. I still love the name Conquistadors. But Georgia Southern men's basketball, going to be a lot of new faces for folks filing into Hanner tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, I'm going to break your heart. Francisco Pizarro is not their point guard, and Hernando Cortez is not their shooting guard, since we're talking
that
about
that would have been better.
But they do have a heavy Latin influence on their team, though.
As well you should.
Being from Miami, Florida National, they've only had athletics since 2013. They compete in the USCA, the United States Collegiate Athletic Association. It's going to be the first time that Georgia Southern has ever entertained Florida National. As a matter of comparison, you remember that the Eagles played North Florida last year. The game before, the Ospreys had played Florida National. They were actually trailing that game in the second half. They only beat them by 8 points. Florida National is a team that's going to jack a lot of threes. They're going to try to get into transition. They're going to press Georgia Southern. And it's typical of teams of that ilk, whether you're NCCAA, one of the Christian schools, or one of the NAI schools. You see them shoot a lot of threes, try to play fast, generate more possessions just to try to stick with teams from the Division I level. But as far as new names, well, let's start with some of the names you're familiar with. I'd say Elijah McCadden, David Vitti, Ado Umanami. That'd be about it. No, Greg, did you? Look, Jacob Sowers is a fellow walk-on that's been on the roster. Mackenzie McFadden was injured last year, but he's going to be involved in the rotation. Outside of that, it's a lot of new guys, a lot of junior college guys, so it comes out to be a veteran roster, despite it not being a veteran roster here. It's going to be a team that is predicated on pressure defense. We know Brian Berg is a Chris Beard disciple, having spent 4 years with him at Texas Tech, and that year at Little Rock in this conference, whenever they won 31 games, and they were by far the best team in the league that year. Nobody was touching Little Rock. That was my first year in Statesboro, and I remember the Eagles played a home-and-home with the Trojans. The game at the Jack Stevens Center was reasonably close in the second half, but they locked it down. The game here in Statesboro was never close. just thinking back to how those teams defended and how Texas Tech became a national power because of how they defended, that's the same kind of intensity and mentality and trying to fight for a culture. And Coach Berg has used that a lot when I've talked with him these last few days. This team is fighting for its culture. So many new guys, they're all in a new place, but they're all getting a chance to play Division I basketball. And for so many junior college guys, that's a dream come true. They left high school thinking, I've got to figure a way to get to Division I, and whether I spend a year or two here, that's my path. And now that they're here, the curtain's about to go up to see what this team is going to look like. You may not get a terribly accurate read because of who the opponent is, and then Saturday it's Coastal Georgia, knock on wood, if it actually gets played. But you at least get to see them get some on-court live experience. You're going to fall in love with Eric Boone handling the basketball. Zach Bryan is one of the best athletes I have ever seen in any sport. I think about Prince Toyabi down low. He only stands 6'6", but he is a chiseled 235 pounds. Somebody like an Andre Savrasov, who spent time with Coach Berg out of Texas Tech for 2 years, he's someone that could be in the starting lineup. There are a lot of people that you don't know now, and because of COVID-19, social distancing at a 25% capacity, it's not going to be as full as it could be, but it's going to be loud regardless, because we know those sound panels in hand are there for a reason. It's going to sound rocking regardless of the total number of people that are inside the oldest facility in the Sun Belt. It is a strong schedule, but you shudder because you don't know how many games are going to get played. You don't know how far you're going to get. But these guys are tired of playing each other. They've been doing it since June when they got here, having never visited the campus before they committed. That's what COVID-19 has forced recruiting to do, is do it all virtually, and you have to trust a lot more. And that's another important word for Coach Berg, is trust. These guys have bought into him. They have trusted him because not too long ago, he was coaching for a national championship at Texas Tech. That speaks pretty loudly.
Yeah, that'll do it. Again, it's a 1 o'clock tip-off for Georgia Southern men's basketball against Florida National. It'll be a 4 o'clock tip-off on Saturday against Coastal Georgia. That one will not be on the radio because of Georgia Southern, Georgia State being played up in Atlanta. But Georgia Southern women's basketball will get things started at Jacksonville State. 3 p.m. the tip-off tomorrow. And then on Saturday, they will make their way to Augusta to take on Augusta University. A 2 p.m. tip-off on Saturday. Again, neither one of the Saturday games will be on the radio because of the Georgia Southern, Georgia State overlap. But we will get things going, and as of right now, I think that's the only basketball games that we are going to miss. Now, still an opportunity for a bowl game, and Lord knows that always throws a rink in the chain of everything as far as scheduling goes.
Yeah, there's 10 possibilities, and who knows that could change because of who's available to play, and you could see two win teams go to bowls because they'd be the most attractive with a fan base that would be more supportive of it. And you say, well, they travel. Well, it depends on how much you'd be allowed because of where the bowl games are and state statutes and lots of red tape. But what we do know is that Georgia Southern football was 6-3 through 9 games. It's Southern, not State this weekend up at Turner Field. Second time we get a chance to play at Turner Field. 2 years ago, it was such a fun day, getting up 28-0, winning 35-14 to finish up a 9-3 regular season. Last year here on Thanksgiving Saturday, it was a night kick to end the season. That was a blast, a 38-10 win. Georgia Southern's dominated the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And it felt like what it should have been the whole time, outscoring the Panthers by a combined 73-24. We do know, though, Georgia State has turned a corner defensively. They've developed this power running game. They were one of the top teams nationally. I think they were 13th in the country last year, over 240 yards per game on the ground, better than 200 yards a game so far this year, with a three-headed monster and a new quarterback, an athletic quarterback, a 6'5" quarterback that we know Terry has fallen in love with over the course of the season before we've had a chance to actually see Quad Brown live. You know they don't like each other. Nobody from either school likes each other on the field. They Chad Lunsford and Sean Elliott like each other because they're good friends.
Except for Saturday.
Except for those couple of hours on Saturday, and we will see who has the better handshake between the managers. I guess we got to call them managers, don't we?
Yeah. Does that make Chris Foster the assistant head coach? Does that make him the bench coach?
I just Bob DeBess is the pitching coach.
No, he would be the hitting coach because of the offense, and then Scott Sloan's the pitching coach for defense.
They both look like pitching coaches.
Yeah. But I could see Bob making the trip out to the mound to make the change.
Well, had to in the fourth quarter twice last week.
There it is. Call to the bullpen.
I was just thinking option.
Thank goodness it's still in.
The option pitch. They have the bullpens behind the second base stands.
Oh, that would be a great social media plug to have the quarterbacks warming up in the bullpen on the pitches.
And JT didn't have a whole lot of chance to do that. Miller Moseley definitely didn't have a chance to do that after JT lost his helmet on the final drive. Look, we poke fun. It's in good fun, but it was a lot easier to do it 2 years ago whenever the game got out of hand when it did. Granted, we were pretty heavy on it from the word go
from first pitch
on the Eagle Tailgate Show. Record-wise, Georgia Southern has the advantage coming in 6-3. Georgia State is 4-4, even though the Panthers are tabbed as a slight favorite in this game. They've gone back and forth, wins and losses all season. They haven't lost two straight. They haven't won two straight. But they did just win against South Alabama last weekend, so if that's going to hold up, then this would be another L against the Eagles on Saturday.
You look at the offense for Georgia State under second-year offensive coordinator Brad Glenn, and it all starts with who you mentioned earlier, the 6'5". Quad Brown, his name is Cornelius. They call him Quad because he is the fourth.
And he wears number four.
Even better. But you look at the numbers he's put up, 13 passing scores on the year, 6 touchdowns on the ground, does have 8 interceptions, so will get picked off from time to time. But he is somebody that has really become one of the more dynamic players in the conference.
And 3 of those interceptions were in the first half last week against South Al. Georgia State turned the ball over 4 times. They gave up 7 points off of them. So South Alabama had a chance to not just win this game, but win this game comfortably. But when it was only 14-7 late in the third quarter, Georgia State stopped messing around. They ended up scoring 24 points in what turned out to be roughly a quarter. Ended up running away with it by 3 scores. Quad Brown might be 6'5". He is a blessed runner, but not from the standpoint that he is very fast. He's got those long strides, so he's going to look faster than he actually is, but once he figure out where he is going, he can go. And I know that that's a strange way to look at it. He is not as fast as Shy Wirtz, but I think he'd be able to keep up with him because of how long those strides are. And he's legs from about toes up to neck. That's how long his legs are. He's inconsistent with his arm. The week before against App State, that's a reason why the Panthers didn't beat App, even though they controlled most of the game. He was just 11 of 33 passing, missed a couple of open touchdowns. He does absolutely have the talent, and he's in the right system because Brad Glenn was brought specifically to Georgia State from Western Carolina to develop an offense that is centered around the quarterback. It worked very well for Dan Ellington, who warriored his way through the final few games of last season with a torn ACL. Have a tremendous amount of respect for what he was able to do. He's now an assistant on the offensive staff for Georgia State. It's an offense that is very good for Quad Brown. The running backs will grind out the tough yards. Destin Coates is a former 3-star recruit and the top running back recruit in the history of the program. But here's the strange thing about that. He carried twice all game against South Al. He had a fumble lost in the first quarter, didn't return. He got benched. Didn't get hurt. He got benched. So Tucker Gregg, the former walk-on out of Chatsworth, where Billy Napier is from, came in, had 3 second-half rushing touchdowns. He's not going to wow you at 5'10", 220, but don't think the guy can't play, because once you do, he going to burn you. And that's exactly what he did to South Alabama in the third and fourth quarters last week in Mobile.
You look at the defensive side for Georgia State under fourth-year defensive coordinator Nate Fuquay, and it's a lot, like you talked about earlier, very similar to what we saw against Army, because Nate Woody, Fuquay, all in the same tree.
Same tree, and Coach Lunsford talked about that on Monday. So from a preparation standpoint, the fact that travel was as bad as it was, and it's a shorter week anyway, this is going to help the Eagles. Nate Woody is an all-everything defensive guy, and he called a really good game for Army.
Yeah,
it's a good unit, but he called a really good game. The pressure he sent on the final play so the Eagles couldn't get that final snap off of the field goal, it was a great call, bringing the corners like he did. Fuquay, a younger guy, played at Wofford, coached at Wofford. He was the DC there after Woody left. But Georgia Southern's been able to crack them a little bit running the football the last 2 years. And part of it has been because Georgia State has had some injuries. They had two of their top tacklers out for that game a year ago in Statesboro. And even last week in Mobile, they didn't have their starting defensive lineman, Dante Wilson. They didn't have one of their starting safeties in Antavius Lane. But a lot of the guys on the defense we have seen for years, Trajan Stevens, McQueen, Victor Hayward, Quavian White, those are guys that have been there for multiple years. They had 7 sacks last week. That tied a school record. They know how to make plays behind the line of scrimmage. They get after you. The constant pressure. They don't have a really big defensive line, but it's a hungry D-line, and they play low enough that they can get under bigger offensive linemen's pads. Linebackers make a lot of plays. It's a very tough unit, and like we mentioned, it's one that has found itself the last 2 weeks, giving up just 17 to App and 14 to South Alabama, and you just know that they've been stewing for the last 2 years after what the Eagles have done to him.
You talk about 7 sacks last week. A sack and a half of that was on the back of Hardrick Willis, who set the school record for career sacks. He's got 11.5 career sacks on the season. And this is a team that will really get after you behind the line of scrimmage. 66 tackles for loss as a squad, 30 sacks. To put it in perspective, Georgia Southern, who has done pretty well as far as tackle for losses are concerned, 51 on the year. And so you've got 15 more tackle for loss for Georgia State than Georgia Southern, and this is a defensive unit that may be one of the more improved in the conference.
30 sacks is 4th best in the country. Those 66 tackles for loss, 9th best in the country. Now, granted, 12 of them were against South Alabama, but for Georgia Southern, they had 5 sacks and 11 tackles for loss against the Jaguars. So you're going to have breakout games. They're called that for a reason, because they help you get back to where you think you should be. The good thing about this matchup is, Georgia Southern's 1-2 straight. There's going to be animosity between the teams, despite the fact that there's only going to be a couple hundred people there, just like normal for a Georgia State home game. But Shy Wirtz has played really well in his career against the Panthers. I think 2 years ago, the 2 long touchdown passes to Colby Ransom, he was playing practically in his backyard. That was a really neat story for the senior. And then Darion Anderson had the touchdown catch during the first half. It's rivalry games where you need your veterans and specifically your seniors to do their thing.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean Shy. There's quite a few other seniors on this roster who have only fallen to Georgia State once, maybe twice if you were a redshirt in 2016. But this has come up a lot, and we don't necessarily like to talk about this, but it is part of the overall story, that at one time this was a 3-1 lead for Georgia State. They had won 3 consecutive games, and of all things that give Eagle fans frustration, nothing frustrated them more than that number being behind to the Panthers 3-1, and the fact that they were 2-0 at one time at Paulson Stadium. Now, that was corrected last year, the victory up in Turner Field in 2018. It's now 3-3 all-time. Now the Eagles can take the lead back for the first time since they won in the Georgia Dome in 2014. And considering how tough last week was to lose in essence on a blocked PAT and then not getting that last snap off, having to spend a full extra day up in New Jersey, eat your turkey, have your stuffing, and then come out and knock some skulls on Saturday. Let's take out a little bit of aggression, and let's take it out on the people that these guys really want to take it out on.
You bring up that 2014 game. That was a lot of fun.
I wish I could have been there for that, but I've heard a lot of stories from you guys and from fans, and how I know the attendance number was a little bit inflated that day, but the way that it sounded like everybody in Eagle Nation packed into the lower bowl of the Georgia Dome that day.
That was probably the most accurate attendance number that Georgia State has put out, and probably not close, but to hear a resounding boo when the home team comes on the field and just pure elation whenever Georgia Southern runs on the field, that was one of the coolest things. And I remember looking down and Terry turns around and goes, "Buckle up, boys, this is going to be fun."
We heard it to a degree in 2018, but it's outside. Georgia Dome is, of course, enclosed, so whenever the sound goes up, it's going to come right back down. But even 2 years ago when we were up there, Georgia State took the field. It was decent, but you heard more boos than cheers. When Georgia Southern took the field, it was more cheers than boos, and then the performance backed that up, and we had our fun that day, and we'll always look back on how much fun that day was. There's more to this one because State, I think, feels that they can have a winning streak to end the season. This is their last game. They're only playing 9 games, so this is it for them. They may get a shot at a bowl, but as far as they know, This is their senior day. This is it for them, a chance to have a winning season. For Georgia Southern, two games are scheduled after this with FAU and then App State at Paulson. They're not going to lead the Eagles to a Sun Belt Conference championship by any stretch, but it does give you an opportunity to make this season more impressive despite everything else that has happened already in 2020. You look at stats in these games, and we've talked about stats, but eventually it comes down to how much do you dislike the person you line up across from? And how badly do you want to beat that person you line up across from? Because that person thinks that because at one time there was a 3-1 lead for the Panthers, that this is a rivalry. And from their standpoint, it probably did become a rivalry. But there's a lot of people in Statesboro who don't believe that, don't believe this ever should have been a rivalry. And you can prove that Saturday that this doesn't need to be a rivalry.
Get your turkey, your stuffing, your mashed potatoes, your macaroni. What's your plans for Thanksgiving?
Food.
Okay, well, probably could have guessed that one.
What does your mom make again?
Everything.
No, but the corn thing? The corn casserole?
Yeah, there's the big things.
We're not going to get to eat together this year, so I'm trying to remember exactly what she's made the last couple
of
years.
The macaroni and cheese that she makes is out of this world. They've got two different kinds of dressing. You've got corn from that my mom's family grew in South Carolina. My uncle calls it corn from God's country. Everything. It's amazing.
Just throw it all on the table. Get what you want.
And my cousin Fran is going to bring some Rice Krispie treats. It's a long-running joke, but...
Is that the ones with the red middle, or...?
No, that's pound cake.
Okay.
That'll be there, too.
Okay.
No, that...
Because I remember last year we ate pound cake and there was a big red, big space of red dye. What's going on?
There's a streak. There's a red streak of food coloring in the pound cake.
Okay.
And it's not a pound cake if there's not a red streak. You will never convince me otherwise.
Okay. Okay. All right. That's coming back.
Because my grandmother, who is the world's best cook, you'll never convince me otherwise, she would put, whenever my mom and her siblings were in high school, they went to Osborne High up in Cobb County. And so the colors were red. So for like the banquets and whatever, my grandma would make a pound cake and put a little streak of red in it for Osborne. Well, she just kept on doing it because it became a thing. And until I was probably 12, 13, I had never eaten a pound cake that didn't have a red streak in it. So somebody handed me a piece of pound cake and I was like, what is this? They're like, it's pound cake. I'm like, no, it's not. And I fought the person and argued with them that it wasn't pound cake.
Okay, so what do you call it?
It's just cake.
Okay, so it's not necessarily not pound cake. It's just
right,
cake.
It's just cake.
Okay.
And it can be great. I'm not saying it's not good.
Okay.
But it's not pound cake if it doesn't have a red streak in it. And one of the many oddities of...
Well, now you got me hungry, and it's still 2 days away. And we got to travel on Friday, which means you can't sleep in. Football all day, though, will help on Thursday.
Yeah. I guarantee you, I'm not going Black Friday shopping.
I know your family likes to do that.
Yeah, I don't know what their plans are this year. Because my mom and my cousins and my aunt always go crazy on Black Friday. They're not the ones you see on the news or anything. Let's not
yet
put that out there. But, like, they'll start on Thanksgiving evening, probably about 8 or 9 o'clock. And they'll go until 5 or 6 the afternoon of day after Thanksgiving. They'll go for almost 24 hours. I mean, again, they're not going out there stomping people and all that. But but it's always, I don't know what they're going to do this year. You're not a big Black Friday shopper, are you?
I'm not a big shopper.
Well, that's a good point.
Like I'm an eater. If you want to buy me food, then I'll help you out.
But I hope everybody out in Eagle Nation has a great Thanksgiving. Get to spend it with a lot of good people, with a lot of good food. And then we hopefully will see a lot of you out at Turner Field in Atlanta. It'll be a noon kickoff or first pitch coming up on Saturday, 10 o'clock the airtime on the Georgia Southern Sports Network, as well originate from the Pete Van Wehren broadcast booth.
Yeah, Frank's hoping he could run it to Bob Horner and Dale Murphy.
When he said, I think I just saw Bob Horner last year on the tailgate, I was about done. He just started naming random former Braves. I think he named Marcus Giles, Andrew Jones.
Is Mark Lebke here?
But it'll be a fun Saturday, hopefully, up in Atlanta. Again, 12 noon, the kickoff between Georgia Southern, Georgia State. Until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.